$1,000 or more online at WPFWFM.org. Your donation helps WPFW build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
I'm Muiza Muntali, host of African Now, and you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
And welcome to WPFW Washington. In this hour, we the people. I'm your host, David Whetstone, here at WPFW 89.3 FM, WPFWFM.org, 47 years strong with jazz and justice because our struggle continues and we're listener supported. That's the important part, and I thank you for that. My congratulations to Voices with Vision and to Wake Up and Stay Woke. They have made what we are calling you to do in this hour. They made their goal because we're in a summer pledge drive, and I congratulate them. Many, many listeners put us over the goal by doing a sustaining donation. My charge this hour is to exceed $500 to contribute to the $100,000 plus that we need each and every month to keep this station going, again, for 47 years, because you, the listener, choose to support us. You can do that by going to 1-800-222-9739, 1-800-222-9739, or WPFWFM.org, bright red donate button in the upper left corner. And for those who are carrying around and listening to us on their smartphone, Cash App, $WPFWFM. So without further ado, the title of the show is People's Action. And that is the name of an organization that's represented by Miss Soma Arias. Miss Arias immigrated from Kansas from El Salvador at age 12 and ultimately went on to lead Sunflower Community Action, where she worked on training organizers and building a base of volunteers to fight for driver's license and tuition access for immigrants and to fight other harmful policies. Ms. Arias brings 20 years of organizing experience to her role as executive director for People's Action Institute and People's Action. Her organizing work with the two groups involves many issues, including immigrant rights, voting rights, and economic justice. And as her practice, and these organizations do practice, They are always centered on directly impacted people to build power. And that's what we intend to do in this hour. We tend to inspire and empower people to build more power so we can get the changes we need. Ms. Arias, good morning, and thank you for being with us.
Good morning. It is so good to be here. Thank you for having me.
I'm so grateful to have you here. So let's really get into it here. For those who haven't heard of People's Actions and the Institute, can you describe them to the listeners?
Yes. You know, we are an organization or a network with about 40 affiliates in 30 states. And by affiliates, I mean organizations on the ground in states, what we call base building organizations, to also build power to change the condition of people's lives. And we build with people from all places and races. So we shape the future for our people and those who will join us. We do, you know, we bring joy to our work. We are uncompromising in getting people what they need to thrive and build safely, live healthy lives in a clean environment. And, you know, we just believe that change can only be fueled by people in communities, in the communities who understand, can build bridges toward each other. And at People's Action, we provide an infrastructure and direction for that to happen.
Okay. And people might take notice, I have some very fastidious listeners. I mentioned People's Action and People's Action Institute. And for those of us in the nonprofit world, we know those are 301, C3 and C4 designations. Can you just make that clear for some listeners who are curious?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, the People's Action Institute is our 501c3. That means, and you know, and it's the organization that has been around for 50 years. But as you know, and as we navigate our political and legal infrastructure, a 501c3 can only do so much political work. So a few years ago, you know, it's decades ago, we decided we needed a C4, and that's our People's Action. Just that's more of the political arm. And we also have a political PAC.
Yes, so it's a suite of the latter is more action-oriented, and the former, the first one, is more education-oriented.
That is
just
correct.
Just the facts,
yep.
And you're being very modest, but, you know, you mentioned 40 member-based power-building organizations in, 29 or 30 states?
It's 30 states, and we, that engages over a million people. These are leaders. So we, in total, we represent over 500,000 organizers who train others and recruit leaders representing over a million leaders and members that are members of those organizations in those states. So we provide, you know, an organizing home for people to make meaning about what's happening in our everyday lives.
Make meaning of what's happening in our lives. Thank you. Before we dig in further, I wonder if you could share a little bit of your own personal story. I mentioned at age 12, you came from El Salvador to Kansas. And how did you wind up where you're at today with your responsibilities, your accountabilities, and such?
Oh, I love that question, David. I, you know, because I do bring into my role the different journeys, my identities. You know, I'm an Indigenous woman, I'm an immigrant, I'm a woman of color, and I'm a Kansan because I've lived in Kansas for over 40 years. So I made my way to Kansas, like you said, at the age of 12 when I had to flee El Salvador. With my sisters, I'm the youngest of four sisters. And, you know, there was, as most people know, an intervention by the United States that made that conflict worse. And we had to leave the country to survive. And in Kansas, I found fellowship with fellow immigrants in a local church. And, you know, I did a lot of church work until, you know, the late 90s when I found organizing. But, you know, in church too often, I felt like I related to the world around me in ways that made me feel small and disconnected from the broader world. But that began to change when someone from People's Action, a People's Action organizer, knocked on my door. And I believe that, you know, just at that moment, my life began to change, because we as organizers, funders, advocates, we have that precious responsibility today, because, you know, I am here because of organizing and I believe in organizing. And it's especially important in this moment where so many of us worry that democracy is fading away and that those who want to divide us will win. I remind us that we already know what to do. Organizing, to me, the organizing is the antidote to everything. We have to talk to our neighbors. Sounds simple, but it's incredibly hard, especially right now. Yet when we come together, we find joy and power to shape our lives with the person next door, because that is why I'm here. And that's what happened to me. An immigrant child, refugee from El Salvador, finding community, finding support, and then having an organizer who knocked on my door more than once. Nothing like me is the reason why 23 years later, I am here.
And I'm sure things have changed over time, for sure, including the aspect that you and I allude to about being welcome and, if not integrated, sometimes that word is freighted, a responsible member of a community that's respected with mutual agency between one another. Those are fancy words, but it's we live together, we work together, and we purpose together to have good communities. The question before us is, how can we build a multiracial, pluralistic democracy with an inclusive economy? And think writ large, folks. Don't think of just numbers and dollars with the economy. Right now, in the face and threat and probably the eventual defeat of the rise of authoritarianism, you've already been giving us the answer. I want to clue listeners in to what you just described with your encounter, or that person knocking on the door is deep canvassing. We'll surely talk about that before we leave. And since we're in a fun drive, I want to help people focus. We're going to talk about transforming crisis into opportunity. Crisis is not the only lens to see our situation. We're going to talk about, a lot of organizers talk about alignment. What is aligning, or what is the alignment that makes change happen? What are the challenges to effective organizing? And then after all, what is good organizing? How do we know it? How do we enjoy it? How do we share it? So with that outline in mind, I'm drawing on hearing you in your presentation. You were recently through Washington. Our guest last week was John Nichols. You and he and some others participated in a forum just about this very topic. And, I posed the question and the challenge, but you've said it already. Relational power building organizing is essential to building the democracy, the communities, the nation, the just living situation that we need. How do you see you and your organization? What are the threats that we face now? And then, more importantly, what are the concerns that you're engaging?
Yeah, I mean, you said, one of the themes is like really transforming crisis into opportunity. And I happen to believe both in the work that I've done in church building, and then in my 30s coming into organizing and doing this work. And in both experiences, I find that those closest to the problem are the experts in finding the solution when they come together, because I believe in the power of human beings and people when we give them that space. And I also, so I'm shaped by those ideals and ideas that are about organizing. And then also, with the work that I did in church, a lot of what shaped, how I lead and how I think now is really like liberation theology and some of the power and hope and joy that I found in people who back home in El Salvador, who were going through hard times and crisis moments, but came together and aligned around a vision, around hope in each other and what they could do together. And I think that formula that that is the magic. Like, how can we bring people together? And I see that, and you see it in the, in people in war, in crisis. You've seen it, and we continue to be inspired by Black people in this country who have endured so much, and yet they're the ones who got us here. You know, they're the ones who got us to even the moment that we're experiencing now in the Democratic Party and with this potential new president in Kamala Harris. So I do believe that when people come together, we can find solutions to the most challenging problems. And that's why I love organizing, because, you know, I believe that that's how we're going to do it when we take the time to do that. And I know that we're going to talk about, you know, the challenges, and there are many, but I just, you know, I really want to ground this conversation in that I am here, we are here, and that is still the power that can change the world. People understanding, and I said earlier that part of our most essential work of community organizations, like the 40 organizations in the 30 states that we represent, help people make meaning. So there is a lot about making meaning, as you know, that the social infrastructure and fabric of who we are in this country, who we talk to, is important. And the role that those organizations play in our communities is crucial to maintaining a strong democracy.
And, you know, I want to capitalize on something. Thank you for honoring the struggle that Black folk, but along with Brown folk and Indigenous people, make one community contributes to another, then another, then another. Some points of history and people's struggles not only must be remembered, but embraced to inspire. And I want to say, for instance, you know, we're celebrating an anniversary of the Civil Rights Act, and, you know, people look upon important rulings from the Supreme Court. We wouldn't have any advancements in education for Black and Brown kids if it wasn't for Melendez versus the United States. So if parents of children can get together, whether it's in Texas or Virginia or California, or students themselves, you know, do walkouts and protests, all these people are speaking up and taking action, and they're being listened to. And they might not be listened to by the people in power, but they're listened to by other people. And that's important. I'm borrowing a lot. Miss Arias, before we come up on our break, I want to say that part of the inspiration for this interview is your report from People's Action, The Antidote to Authoritarianism. And let's remind people where they can find out information about your organization in this report.
Yeah, you can. There's The Antidote to Authoritarianism is where we make the case about why organizing is not only, you know, deepens and strengthens the pillars of democracy, but we also make the case for why it is the way that we fight against authoritarianism. And at peoplesaction.org is very simple. People's Action, one word, People's Action.
With an S. You can, that S, people.
You can go there and find everything about who we are, what we do, how you can get involved. And you can find the report there as well.
Yeah, and the long, long history that leads up to their work. The report starts out with a very simple definition of authoritarianism. It is a fear-driven reaction to uncertainty. Let's kind of grapple with that. What happens further?
Yeah, I mean, the uncertainty, but also the isolation and the separation, which is why for us, when we, you know, as we were coming into, so we released that report in June of 2023, but it really comes out of us making an assessment of where are we as a movement, where are we as a progressive movement, where are we as community organizers, where are we as human beings after, you know, coming out of COVID, which emphasized isolation, right? And and recognizing something that was happening, you know, during that time, where like that isolation was also impacting organizing in a big way. And the way that it was impacting us is like the magic and the power of who we are as organizers and progressive institutions relies on being connected to people. And of course, there are many ways that we can do that, and we can do it effectively, like all the social media and all of the other tools that we have, but nothing is more crucial and important than human contact. And that is one of the things that we lost. So we make the case in the report for, you know, a number of things and pillars that we need to strengthen organizing, but that organizing fuels change and fuels strengthening of democracy. And it's in fact an antidote to the authoritarianism.
And we'll find out more about the pillars of organizing for people's actions from Sulma Arias. Ms. Arias is the executive director of the People's Action Institute and People's Action. And you're listening to We the People right here at WPFW 89.3 FM, WPFWFM.org. We're in the midst of a summer fun drive. We need your pledges. We need your support. We need your connectivity to make us thrive and go. We've been doing that because we're listener supported for over 47 years. And I believe that our program director, Katia Stitt, will join me before I leave this break. But take down this number to get started. 1-800-222-9739. 1-800-222-9739. Or if you're listening to us through the internet, WPFWFM.org has a bright red donate button. WPFW has been around for 47 years. We recognize that the struggle continues. It's continued, for instance, for over 193 years since Nat Turner's rebellion on this day of broadcast. It's continued through musicians like Miriam Makeba, who coined in one of her songs a recognition that the struggle continues. But it's instituted, it's acted upon by you, the listener. Won't you become a sustaining member today by calling 1-800-222-9739, 1-800-222-9739. And I mentioned listeners on the internet from various locations, but there are people who listen on their smartphone. And so if you have Cash App, it's $WPFWFM. My goal is to exceed $500. There may be one listener who can help us do that, or there may be 10, or there may be 50. There may be people who have means. There may be people who, because of their connection to WPFW, because they've listened throughout the years, they will make that pledge to make sure that you, the listeners far and wide, get an opportunity to find out about things like effective organizing, what you can do with your busy lives to make things better, not only for yourself, for your family, for your neighborhood, for your community, but for the world. And again, I urge you, without hesitation, call now, 1-800-222-9739. We'll continue our conversation with you, Ms. Arias, and then I'm sure I'll be joined by others later. Do we need to say something further about the oppression or the actions or operations of authoritarianism? For instance, what happens when authoritarianism capitalizes on increasing inequality because people are fearful and uncertain? What really happens? Some people might say it's obvious, but it's not so obvious because there's some subtle long-term operations to those who want to abuse power.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And I think what I fear sometimes in the rhetoric that we hear, you know, on the news, and then sometimes that when we talk about even democracy and authoritarianism, is that, you know, you talked about the incredible struggle and the legacy and the fights that have gotten us, all of us, to where we are. But the reality is that, like, maybe in the last 20, 30 years, a lot of people have lost a sense of what it really takes to, or what it has taken to enjoy the freedoms that we have today. And that, you know, and that has taken so much work and struggle in the lives of so many people. And the things that we, when we say authoritarianism, people, you know, it's not a word that people hear. So what does it mean? It means, I mean, and we're seeing it all over the world, right? We're seeing what's happening in Venezuela. We, like I talked about it, you know, El Salvador, and I remember before I left experiences of actually being completely powerless to the power of the military or the president, or living constantly in fear. And some of the things that you hear, you know, you hear it about Cuba, you hear about Venezuela. These are things that could happen here as well. And we hear them from, you know, one of the candidates running for president. Like if you vote, you know, like, and they seem like, and people don't take that stuff serious. Like, oh, if you vote for me, you'll never have to vote again. Wait a minute, what exactly does that mean? Like, and so people have to think about those things, have to think about the fact that, you know, these things, these words that sometimes we say and, you know, just sometimes so lightly, mean something profound and will impact your life, your freedom, your ability to have access to, you know, healthcare, to have, you know, to reproductive health, the ability for corporations to take over and decide how much you pay for milk and food at the, you know, at the grocery store. Like those are things like where the rich and the powerful control the economy, control the military. You may think that things are and all the rhetoric in a situation where all the rhetoric you hear is fear of others, mistrust of others who may not look like you. And the inability for us to come together, no matter what differences, is the perfect ground for, because they use the rhetoric of fear, is the perfect ground for authoritarianism to take, and dictators to take over. And that is exactly what we're seeing in this environment.
You mentioned different countries, and it calls to mind that sometimes, dare I say it, one country affects another, regardless of political views here. And so I think organizing represents an opportunity of, no matter how we agree or disagree, there's some essentials. One of them that I'll mention, and I'm sure your organization and the report we talked about earlier mentions, is that there must be an analysis of racial capitalism. It's an essential that people walk with that, that they have an understanding of that, and that they develop approaches to that. Should we go through the components of what we can understand of racial capitalism? And then I want to help us get to the, you know, the more positive affirmations of organizing.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I also think that racial capitalism is exactly, I mean, and we see it every day, right? I think before I go there, David, I think that there is a, you know, there is a methodology that we use in organizing that we call Deep Canvas, right? And as we're having conversations with people think about race and racial capital and how it's used against us, and it's used to divide us, and it's really used against all of us all the time. But people are afraid to talk about it because they don't know how to engage in the conversation. Yet, when we are having, you know, at this moment, we're having hundreds of thousands of conversations with people all over the country, all over the states that we're working in. And the way to get across any division about race, about, you know, whether it's urban or rural, is very simple, David. It's really people. It's really coming, like, if any one of us is intentional about opening up, about being curious about another person, not a person in your circle, not a person, you know, that speaks the same language, the same color of skin, whatever. Like, if we can get across people and are curious about people, we learn something. We may not be able to, like, completely change each other's mind about, you know, about race, about the economy, about politics, But you will not walk away the same if you make an effort to talk to someone who's different. So I think, you know, so in the report, we talk about the things that are used to divide us: race, capital, and, you know, really power, and who gets to have it and who gets to tell the story. So that is our experience. Our experience on the ground is like, you know, in this report, just to say, we used people who are directly impacted by the issues that we work on, but we also talk to academics, we talk to funders and those who fund the work that we do because they believe in racial justice, in economic justice, and in a country that is more democratic and fair and stronger. And so we interview a lot of people, but at the end of the day, the people that we, whether we know that we're making progress, that we're making change, is when we get on those phones and we talk to those people and understand and hear and understand how they're making meaning of what they're seeing on the 5 o'clock news or on news or social media. And that to me, it's what says, oh, okay, this is the conversation we need to be having, because we're not having the right conversation. So we go through some of those elements in the report as well.
If I could break that down, and I want to highlight this notion of deep canvassing that we don't talk about every day. You said that you experienced somebody unlike you in background knocking on your door and politely and respectfully trying to have contact with you, and then in some way earning enough trust to have a conversation because they believe they were listened to. Let me say this. You mentioned that some of this happened through the pandemic. Our Surgeon General, Dr. Murthy, said our epidemic of loneliness and isolation has been an underappreciated public health crisis. And it's not limited to that. And it's not that people are hapless and destitute, but they do feel a deep sense of isolation. And again, we don't want unconstructive or destructive forces to capitalize on that. So there's got to be a way of engagement. There's got to be, if not goodwill or good faith, people recognize their own needs. I'll just be frank about it. Can you mention outrightly what this deep canvassing has done? I know it involved over 250,000 conversations. I know, given the political and social developments, you want to even double that number in some short amount of time. What are some of the issues that were taken up?
Yeah, you know, and I want to say to you and to listeners, you know, organizing and community organizing has been, I think, the backbone of so many systemic changes, and the wins that we've had in this country has been around for many years, decades. But deep canvas within that toolbox that organizers use is a tactic, is a method, is the how do we do this? And so we train people on how to have this type of conversations, right? But it's a discipline, and you named it, right? One of the crises that we face is like the isolation. Also, I mean, it's incredible, like, because we started to like the isolation, right? And you kind of lose the ability to, the emotional ability to stay in a conversation when you start to feel uncomfortable. And like, just like, honestly, just check yourself. There's a lot of talk about, well, if I don't feel good in doing this XYZ thing, this conversation, I'm just gonna hang around people who believe like me and make me feel good about everything I say and they agree with me. So we've lost the ability to be in a room and have a conversation with people who doesn't agree with us. So what we do in Deep Canvas is actually train people to stay in a conversation, to ask the right questions. And that, you know, sometimes that comes natural to people. For most people, it does not. So in organizing and at People's Action, we are training 43,000 people to have those conversations. And yes, 43,000 people, a lot of volunteers. We're training volunteers, 43,000, to have those conversations. We plan to have over 600,000 conversations in the next few months. But this is something that organizers do all the time, and we do it all the time, right? To talk about specific issue. And we found, you know, if we wanted to take numbers, we found in 2020, when we had the 280,000 conversations, that we were able to move, to persuade, to bring people into understanding about an issue at a rate of 48%, which in canvassing and this work, it's a huge number. I mean, it's a powerful, it's something that we knew as organizers that it works, right? Talking to people actually works to understand each other. But, you know, one thing that you mentioned, like the isolation post-COVID is a crisis. And I just read something the other day, like I think over the last maybe three decades, every time there's been a survey or a polling about the simple question of like, do you know your neighbor? Can you name their names? Like every year, like I think it was like over the last three decades, we've like right now we're at 7 out of 10 people saying that they don't know who their neighbor is. They've never had conversation. They don't know their names. So that's interesting. So that is a threat to that. Like we said at the beginning, it is the perfect landscape and conditions for authoritarianism, but there is no way for us as human beings and a country to overcome the challenges and the crisis, climate change, and especially climate change that's going to impact all of us and the huge issues that, you know, that impact all of us. But there's no way for us to overcome those challenges if we don't learn and understand and relearn that the power isn't when we come together across differences, but we need people and we need to get out of our own isolation and our own silos in order to build power with others.
There's a lot in what you just said. I want to remind listeners, you're listening to We the People right here at WPFW 89.3 FM, WPFWFM.org, where over 100 programmers bring you jazz and justice in an attempt to build a better community, one broadcast at a time. We're in the middle of a summer fun pledge drive. I'm given the responsibility of exceeding $500 in this hour. I will be frank with you. I need people to call now. Do not wait till the end of the show. Call 1-800-222-9739. 1-800-222-9739. This is what we call in the business a reset. We're trying to push the show along, give you valuable and powerful information, but at the same time, we need your support. It is no accident that we're here for 47 years because you, the listener, choose to support us. I'm wondering if our program director, Katia Stitz, in the studio, I wonder if she could give us further inspiration besides my voice for you to give.
Well, good morning, David, and good morning, Sulma. It's very nice to be with you both, and it's wonderful to hear the work that you're doing. Sulma, thank you so much for bringing that work to our air. And, of course, David, for once again identifying a guest that is lifting up how we get free, lifting up economic and racial justice and immigrant justice, which encompasses the first two. Right. And of course, last week you had John Nichols on, journalist John Nichols. And so this is the caliber of programming that David Whetstone brings to you on We the People. And if you value it, if you find it vital to your listening, to your education, you know, this is really like a university of the airwaves when you think about WPFW and all the varied programming, both music and public affairs. And so we know that you have kept us strong since 1977, and we ask that you do it again. 800-222-9739. We still are in need of exceeding $500 this morning. $500 to go. You can also call 202-588-9739. You can go to the website, WPFWFM.org, and you can do Cash App, $WPFWFM. It is unimportant how you make that donation, but what is important is that you support that which supports you. David Whetstone, through We the People, supports you every week. And the information, the inspiration you get. We just heard a wonderful discussion from Sulma about organizing. I couldn't believe when it was said that they will have like 600,000 conversations over the next few months. That is organizing. And what better way to amplify the message of the organization that she is with and her personal work and the work of WPFW than to have a WPFW on the airwaves, to have a liberatory medium on the air that you can turn to, that is not invested in a particular narrative, that is not beholden to a corporate or governmental interest, only to you, the people. So we, the people, make WPFW work. We, the people, make this program work. $500 to go, 800-222-9739. We have about 21 minutes to do it. We can do this together, folks. If I can just take another moment, David, and just break down our sustaining program. We know that there are people within the sound of our voices that can make a $1,000 pledge, a $500 pledge, and do it very easily. We also know there are those that can do $5 a month, $10 a month, or $5 one time or $10 one time. Whatever is in your wallet and your heart to give to WPFW, please make that action now. Please do what you can to be an activist, to be in solidarity with the work that you're hearing about on our air, with the work of David Whetstone and We the People, with the work of WPFW right now. $500, 800-222-9739, or you can go online to WPFWFM.org. Those are the ways to connect. And I hope, David, I can join you a little later in the program to thank folks with you.
And thank you very much, Katia Stitt. You know, there are over 100 programmers, and Ms. Arias and Ms. Stitt have given us a couple of bridges here. I'm a big believer in cross-pollination. Your embrace of WPFW is not only in this hour for this show, but we know there are people out there, dare I say it, listening to WPFW and knowing that this is a unique place to get information becomes a lifestyle. And it's not something that they keep under their own arms, but they share it with others. The most important thing you do is tell a friend. For instance, we're talking about building change from the bottom up on the ground level. And when you say on the ground, think of 10 o'clock on Fridays with Esther Avirum, who makes it a point when activists come to Washington, D.C. or are acting throughout the country, she brings you their voices directly. Or think about taking action on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. with members of Empower DC, a local effort that represents a regional and national impact. Those are the kinds of programs that you support by donating to WPFW. 1-800-222-9739. Ms. Arias, I'm so grateful for your presence here with us in this hour. Let's go further. You know, what leaps out is long-term. It's not just a moment, even though moments are important. It's about movement. It's about working together over a long period of time. Quickly, if we haven't learned any lesson, sometimes through pain, there are strategic pathways that the corporate conservative right have achieved. And they've done that by the same human instinct that we have to do. They've acted with a commitment over a long period of time. So we don't wake up one morning and kaboom, a negative change has happened. This has been honed and developed. And I'm glad you're exemplifying respectfully strategic repetition, careful rhetoric, but this is so terribly important. It's important to base building. It's important to relational power. Just expand on that so people really stop hearing me yapping, but get a clear idea from you.
Yeah, you know, if you were talking about a report that talks about what the antidote to authoritarianism is, but it also talks about what we call an organizing revival. And I wanna emphasize that part of the report, because what we are calling for is that, and what we are in as a network is that, right? And so it's an assessment, like I said earlier, You know, I took on the role 2.5 years ago, and as I had conversations across the base, the ground, the people on the ground to assess what is the state of, you know, emotional and mental, you know, where are people in this moment? And what we find, and this is, you know, doesn't, you know, have to be like, it was our assessment, like the field after 1.5 years of conversations, we determined, and you'll see it in the report, is not just People's Action, but actually 27 progressive organizations, a coalition. Yes. Of people who all agreed, you know, there is the infrastructure of what holds communities together is weak, and we need to strengthen it. And so every one of our directors and some of our coalitions, like Melio, and you know, and so you'll see National Domestic Workers, you'll see Center for Popular Democracy, Community Change, you'll see some of the names in the report. There's an agreement that organizing is what will, is how we begin create change and transformation. And transformation happens when people, you know, who don't always agree on everything can come together around one thing. And you also talked at the beginning, David, about what is this thing that it's effective alignment, right? And alignment doesn't mean that we all agree 100% on everything. In organizing, we have what we call self-interest, right? That means that we talk about, you know, when I would go door knocking, I would knock on a door. And like in my early, very early years, when I, you know, when I did door knocking through the evangelical lens, through church organizing, and then when I did it as a community organizer, the question was, it's basically like, what are you seeing in your community that you're concerned about? What hurts, you know? And people come up, and then you would, after knocking on 20 doors, you would eventually start hearing that people say, well, I care about this. And then you will knock 20 doors, and then like, people who hadn't been talking to each other, the organizer knows that, oh, there are common themes here. It's about the stop sign, or it's about the dogs in the neighborhood. And that is like that the very essence of like something very simple that brings people together. And of course, then we take that to, you know, federal issues and connect it. But that's what an organizer does. So our network of 40 organizations in 30 states have made a commitment to two things within this organizing revival. A revival is also a reckoning for ourselves that we need to get back to what really matters. Like, this is the focus. This is the thing that we need to focus on and be doing. And so for us, it's like the training of what good organizing is and really doubling down on training. So we at People's Action are training hundreds of organizers on the essence of what good organizing, effective organizing is. That's some of our goals. So all of our organizations are committed to that. And two, we are committed to growing our base. That means that every organization that's on the ground is fueled and powered by people who are engaged with that organization. In some cases, is, you know, we have organizations and committed volunteers that are 1,000, you know, 300, like all together, like we've committed to doubling that 1 million number that I mentioned at the beginning. So people are out there in the streets pulling people into creating a vision for the country and the future that we want together. And that starts at the local level, it starts in our communities. And that's what organizers are out there doing at this moment through what we call an organizing revival.
And again, what highlights what you're talking about can be found at peoplesaction.org. Peoplesaction.org. There's an S in there, one word. So we've just got a few minutes to go. I need people to still call and give a pledge. We still have $500 before the close of the hour to raise at 1-800-222-9739. We're talking to Sulma Arias, who's the executive director of People's Actions Institute and People's Action. And if people haven't been encouraged in this hour, let's just simply answer the question, what is good organizing and why does it matter after all? when we have relational power building, when we do base building, what do we see? What are the blessings of doing that work?
Yeah, I mean, well, the blessings of doing that work are, you know, transformation. It not only to the person. So I started by telling the story of this woman who knocked on my door several times. At that time, I was homeschooling my children. I was, you know, still doing a lot of work in the church, very, very, very conservative, and didn't know what organizing was. This woman transformed my life, and she invited me into changing not only my life, but my community with others, right? So change and good organizing doesn't just benefit you and you individually. Good organizing will take you from being an individual to being part of a community, and you will see changes in the community as well.
One quick interjection, if I may. So if you're caught up in blaming teachers because corporate media and conservative forces blame teachers for everything, who have to raise money outside of their salary and school budget to get kids the things that they need. If you're a parent and you've been subject to deep canvassing, you begin to act in solidarity with teachers and the educational, and dare I say, public education system, whether you're in a red state or blue state. Just wanted to give that example, Ms. Arias.
Absolutely. And you know, the last night, so I'm here in Chicago at the Democratic National Convention, and, you know, nobody can say it better than, you know, Michelle Obama when she spoke last night and said, do something, right? So good organizing leads you to action, not just admiring the problem, not just like you just said, not just complaining about the state of things, but actually makes you part of the solution. And that's what organizers will do. It's like, it's about, you know, bringing volunteers together. It's about bringing together the interest of many, individual interest of many, into something that can work to change it, to make effective change in your community, whether it's at the school board level, whether it's like, and that's why I love community organizing, David, because it's at the heart of, you know, when I did so many campaigns in my 25 years of organizing, where it was just about the simple things, where there was like, you know, we need a stop sign at that intersection. And it's like, you know, at stop sign, if people can do that together, if people can change who represents them at the city council, and in some places, it may just be like, it may take 3,000 votes, but if a few people can get that done, you can see change happens, and it's incremental, right?
It's a stepping stone.
Once you see that, and once you engage in that type of change, then, you know, you're hooked from there, because when you have a small win, then you're like, oh wow, it really works. And it doesn't happen overnight. It takes work, and it's not, you know, a magic bullet, but it is transformational, it's effective, and we have made incredible progress.
And that represents people's action. Ms. Arias, I suspect that I'm going to hear from you further, and that I hope that our audience will hear from you further, along with other guests that fit the theme of this show. We've been talking to Soma Arias, the Executive Director of People's Action and People's Action Institute. People's actions change. One more word. We have less than about 20 seconds.
David, I just want to say that I am pledging to you that after school, I'm going to call and I want to pledge $100 to your goal, because I so believe in this work and in this, in public radio supported by community and in organizing. It should be together, like you said. And so I want to encourage others to give, and I am pledging to, I will call and do my pledge of $100. Thank you for your work.
And thank you, Ms. Arias. I wish you all the best, and I wish your organization all the best. And you've given us the bridge. I can now thank somebody, but I want to thank you, the listeners, as well. Won't you call 1-800-222-9739? I think we have a last word from Katia Stitt.
Indeed. Well, first of all, I want to thank Salma. Thank you so much. That was so kind of you. And it is just that kind of partnership, right, between the activists and the organizing and the liberatory space that is WPFW that can get the word out. So we thank you on the good work that you're doing. So we thank you for that. And again, support the great work of David Whetstone. He always has an incredible show. It's always a show that educates and informs and enlightens and inspires and critiques. And that is just what we need from through a very intelligent lens. 800-222-9739. We have $400 to go. You can make this goal with us. We still have 6 minutes to do it. Become a sustaining member this morning at the $50, $100 level will be golden. Perhaps you have $500 and you can say, okay, I've done well in life and I want to do something great for my community. You can take that action. It's quick and easy. You can either do it through calling 800-222-9739 or you can go online to WPFWFM.org. These are the ways to connect, to support We the People. David, thank you for your good work.
Well, thank you, Katia Stitt. And also, those that are in the move with their smartphones, Cash App, $WPFWFM.
I'm Christina Onnestad. Former President Barack Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama addressed the Democratic National Convention last night, rallying support for Vice President Kamala Harris. Pacifica's Alex Gonzalez reports.
Who's going to tell him that the job he's currently seeking might just be one of those black jobs?
Michelle Obama took aim at former President Donald Trump for a statement some have called racist, that illegal immigrants are taking what he called black jobs. The former first lady delivered a rousing speech to the DNC with a simple message: hope is making a comeback. Former President Barack Obama built on the joyful, hopeful tone. He said America should turn away from the politics of hate and anger and toward what Abraham Lincoln called the better angels of our nature. Obama called the Democratic nominee, Vice President Kamala Harris, someone who spent her life trying to give people the same chances she got.
We need a president who actually cares about the millions of people all across this country who wake up every single day to do the essential, often thankless work.
Delegates from Chicago's neighbor, Indiana, say reproductive rights are a key issue there. Allen County Party Chair Derek Camp says Harris was already campaigning effectively on it, even before becoming the nominee.
Definitely something that Donald Trump has made clear that he's going to remove. And so that is definitely something that is going to be top of mind in India.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Donald Trump told CBS News this week he has no regrets. His Supreme Court picks helped overturn the constitutional right to an abortion, which has become a key Democratic campaign talking point.
So Democrats and Republicans, everybody wanted to do this for 52 years, and I got it done. And we should never be in the federal government. The federal government should have nothing to do with this issue. And it's being solved at a state level, and people are very happy about it.
So no regrets?
No regrets, no. I wouldn't have regrets. Again, I did something that was, most people felt, undoable.
Campaigning in the swing state of Milwaukee Tuesday, Harris juxtaposed Trump's position with hers.
We will make sure he does face a consequence, and that'll be at the ballot box in November. In November. And I promise you, when I am president of the United States and Congress passes a bill to restore the protections of Roe v. Wade, I will proudly sign it into law.
Trump campaigned in Howell, Michigan Tuesday, where white supremacists rallied last month and voiced support for him. The Harris campaign blasted the decision to, quote, rally in a town that was historically known as the KKK capital of Michigan. Pacifica's Emily Burris reports.
Trump made unsubstantiated claims that Harris is lying at the DNC about high inflation, problems at America's southern border, and crime rates. He says that crime has worsened since Harris has been in office. Trump also said that she endorses defunding the police.
Over the past 4 years, the Marxist left has waged a vicious war on law enforcement in our country. They've taken away the dignity and the spirit and the life of some of these police officers, and that's why you see it
The crime is so out of control in our country.
According to data from the FBI, crime in the United States has been on a downward trend since it spiked during the pandemic. Violent crime fell back to near pre-pandemic levels in 2022 and dropped further in 2023. I'm Emily Burris, Pacifica Radio.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken left the Middle East Tuesday without securing a ceasefire hostage release deal to end the war in Gaza. He said negotiations will continue.
We need to get the ceasefire and hostage agreement over the finish line, and we need to do it now. Time is of the essence.
Hamas shot down what Blinken called a bridging proposal to President Biden's phased ceasefire plan, saying the U.S. was capitulating to Israeli demands. Al Jazeera's reporting, Israel wants the right to resume attacks on Gaza after hostages are released, and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's new ceasefire